Amnesty International on Wednesday released its 2007 annual report on the state of human rights in countries around the world. The 320-page report makes somber reading, with its detailed documentation of torture and killings, trafficking and imprisonment, rape, repression and discrimination of all kinds. Above all, it warns of efforts by both governments and armed opposition groups to foment fear, to erode human rights, and to create an increasingly polarized and dangerous world. In response to this alarming trend, Amnesty's Secretary General Irene Khan says there must be a stronger sense of global solidarity and a focus on the universality and indivisibility of human rights.
The erosion of human rights can only be arrested if there is a stronger sense of global solidarity, if there is an end to this politics of fear, a sense that there is real value in human rights, that the world, a fractured world, can be brought together around global values of human rights, around the universality of human rights and the indivisibility of human rights.
In her introduction to the report, Khan recalls the four freedoms spelt out by US President Franklin Roosevelt in his vision of a new world founded on freedom of speech and religion, freedom from fear and want. In contrast to that, Amnesty says far too many leaders today are undermining those freedoms by engaging in the politics of fear.
Governments are prepared to water down basic human rights, sometimes justifying it on the issue of war and terror, but on the other, simply downplaying, undermining basic human rights again.
Tawanda Hondura is an Africa specialist at Amnesty's London headquarters. He told me more about the concerns contained in this annual report.
Governments are actually using the rhetoric of fear to terrorize and target opponents and also to target those that are critical of their policies. This is also seen within the context of the war on terror, largely spearheaded by America and also governments largely within Europe. But this has been transposed, and within Africa, there are war and terror-related human rights violations, again, through the peddling of fear. And in countries such as Ethiopia, Kenya, Somalia, Cameroon, to name but a few. So it is a concern for Amnesty International that governments primarily are using fear to violate basic human rights.
The report says that these politics of fear have led to a world which is as polarized now as it was during the Cold War and in many ways more dangerous. Doesn't this really undermine all the work and all the interest in human rights protection that we've seen over the past few decades?
It does, and one way in which this can be seen is, for instance, to give a precise example, is the way that torture is being sought to be undermined or downplayed, where, for instance, methods of coercion, which previously would have been classified or actually currently classified as torture, there are attempts to undermine and weaken them. But regarding, I think, in Africa, similar rhetoric, similar fears are being played upon by governments in Africa, some of them which have for a long time been violating human rights, but have now found legitimacy or justification by looking at what is happening elsewhere in the world, particularly with the war on terror. So I think to answer your question in a nutshell, the answer is yes. What's happening currently is severely undermining general awareness on human rights and all the efforts of people the world over to ensure that human rights are observed and upheld.
Now, the report points out that fear grows out of short-sighted and cowardly leadership. But given that politicians are always interested in their short-term voter support rather than long-term interests, perhaps, isn't your message destined to fall on deaf ears?
Well, we hope not, because what has led the world after the World War II were issues to do with principle. There have been instances, obviously, when adherence to human rights principles have been undermined. But at the end of the day, principle, what is right, has always triumphed. So our call as Amnesty International, which is, again, purely on principle, is to urge the world, to urge governments to ensure that they hold sacrosanct that which is contained in, you know, the UN Charter, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and all the international covenants that most of the United Nations member states actually signed to and ratified.
Your report focuses especially on women who are particularly targeted by these policies of fear. Where would you say is this most prevalent? Where are you most concerned about? And why is there relatively little attention, do you think, to this problem?
Well, women tend to be the ones that are mostly affected by violations of human rights and also by conflict coming out of, or which is the result of, again, the government or armed opposition groups using fear to undermine stability and undermine security. And to give an example, which is within Africa, one finds that in most of the IDP and refugee camps in Chad, in Sudan, it is mostly women that are there. It is mostly women that are grossly affected. Rape is used as a weapon of war in the conflict that engulfs Darfur, the Darfur region of Sudan. So, and this is just but an example. There are other numerous examples that one can point to, again, within the continent of Africa and beyond, where women are the primary targets, suffer the most. But, however, on the other hand, do not receive the same level of publicity or recognition that they are suffering as a, you know, as a group.
You're talking about the situation in Darfur, for example, where the international community has expressed a high degree of outrage at what's going on there, and other countries in Africa as well, and yet seems to be powerless to have any impact on its leaders to stop using oppression and terror or else step down from power. What else can you do here?
Well, there's a lot more that can be done, and one of what can actually be done by the international community is to maintain pressure on the government of Sudan in order to ensure that it accepts the deployment within Darfur of a hybrid African Union and United Nations force. Amnesty International holds that to be, at the moment, the single most important vehicle to ensure that violations of human rights are actually stopped. In addition, we also call upon the government of Sudan to stop directly attacking people and also indirectly using the Janjaweed militia to attack people and commit human rights violations. Your question is, what can the international community do? They can continue putting pressure. They are putting pressure, but there needs to be bite to the buck at the moment. Amnesty International has constantly called upon key regional countries to ensure that they continue putting pressure. If they put pressure, it will take away the lie which has been peddled by the Sudanese government that the situation in Darfur has been exaggerated by the West. So in order to take that away, there is need for greater involvement, greater engagement, particularly by the League of Arab States countries.
A stronger sense of global solidarity and a focus on the global values of human rights. What exactly do you mean by this?
The world needs to ensure that they hold dear and uphold basic human rights, including economic, social and cultural rights, as opposed to a trend we're witnessing at the moment. So what Amnesty International is calling for is basically for governments to uphold the principles that, again, they signed, you know, after World War II, and which have influenced most of the discourse, resolution surrounding conflicts that have affected countries around the world and also particularly in Africa.
This call for global solidarity and a focus on the universality of human rights and human dignity, it echoes much of the language used by the Vatican's own Justice and Peace Council and indeed by the Pope himself. Do you see the Church as an important partner in this fight to be free from fear and oppression?
Yes, indeed. The Church is an important institution within, and that's not just the Catholic Church, but religions of all manner in countries around the world. Religion does play a part within people's lives, and oftentimes religion provides the moral compass that influences society, that influences how people view human rights and how people clamor or call for their own governments to observe and uphold human rights. So, yes, indeed, churches around the world, religions around the world do play an important part in ensuring that human rights are actually upheld, and more particularly that human rights are indivisible, that you cannot divide economic, social and cultural rights from the civil and political rights. You know, each goes with the other. And most countries that are affected by conflict, one can actually find the causes or the drivers of that conflict within violations of economic, social and cultural rights, which ultimately leads to violations of civil and political rights. So in a nutshell, yes, I would say yes, the church and religions the world over do play a part, have a role to play.
And my thanks there to Tawanda Hondura, Africa specialist with the Global Human Rights Network, Amnesty International.